Perry was a likable kid, well-liked around the neighborhood. He never done one thing out of the way to my knowledge. The state stopped him there, and stopped Cullivan too when he said, during the time I knew him in the army, Perry was a very likable fellow. The Reverend Post survived somewhat longer, for he made no direct attempt to compliment the prisoner, but described sympathetically an encounter with him at Lansing. I first met Perry Smith when he came to my office in the prison chapel with a picture he had painted, a head and shoulders portrait of Jesus Christ done in pastel crayon. He wanted to give it to me for use in the chapel. It's been hanging on the walls of my office ever since. Fleming said, "Do you have a photograph of that painting?" The minister had an envelope full, but when he produced them, ostensibly for distribution among the jurors, an exasperated Logan Green leaped to his feet. "If Your Honor please, this is going too far." His Honor saw that it went no further. Dr. Jones was now recalled, and following the preliminaries that had accompanied his original appearance, Fleming put to him the crucial query. "From your conversations and examination of Perry Edward Smith, do you have an opinion as to whether he knew right from wrong at the time of the offense involved in this action?" And once more the court admonished the witness, "Answer yes or no. Do you have an opinion?" "No." Amid surprised mutters, Fleming, surprised himself, said, "You may state to the jury why you have no opinion." Green objected. "The man has no opinion, and that's it." Which it was, legally speaking. But had Dr. Jones been permitted to discourse on the cause of his indecision, he would have testified, "Perry Smith shows definite signs of severe mental illness. His childhood, related to me and verified by portions of the prison records, was marked by brutality and lack of concern on the part of both parents. He seems to have grown up without direction, without love, and without ever having absorbed any fixed sense of moral values. He is oriented, hyper-alert to things going on about him, and shows no sign of confusion. He is above average in intelligence and has a good range of information considering his poor educational background. Two features in his personality makeup stand out as particularly pathological. The first is his paranoid orientation toward the world. He is suspicious and distrustful of others, tends to feel that others discriminate against him, and feels that others are unfair to him and do not understand him. He is overly sensitive to criticisms that others make of him and cannot tolerate being made fun of. He is quick to sense slight or insult in things others say and frequently may misinterpret well-meant communications. He feels he has great need of friendship and understanding, but he is reluctant to confide in others, and when he does, expects to be misunderstood or even betrayed. In evaluating the intentions and feelings of others, his ability to separate the real situation from his own mental projections is very poor. He not infrequently groups all people together as being hypocritical, hostile, and deserving of whatever he is able to do to them. Akin to this first trait is the second, an ever-present, poorly controlled rage, easily triggered by any feeling of being tricked, slighted, or labeled inferior by others. For the most part, his rages in the past have been directed at authority figures. Father, brother, army sergeant, state parole officer, and have led to violent, assaultive behavior on several occasions. Both he and his acquaintances have been aware of these rages, which he says mount up in him, and of the poor control he has over them. When turned toward himself, his anger has precipitated ideas of suicide. The inappropriate force of his anger and lack of ability to control or channel it reflect a primary weakness of personality structure.